As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Talk New York sports here. The Fan.
Good morning.
Hello.
888-808-1019. I've got 2 hours here to continue talking about New York sports, specifically the New York Knicks, but soon to be followed up by the New York Mets, and maybe a little bit about the Yankees. I really don't want to go back to the weekend. I talked about, you know, stupid Judge Homer not being a homer, and how the guy that hits all the homers, yeah, if he homers, I'm just going to call it a homer in real time, but whatever. Talked about the official score taking his time, and whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm really more upset with the officiating as a whole from the Tampa series and the fact that it was in Tampa. Like, it just irked me as a Yankee fan watching them at George M. Steinbrenner Field, where we've watched spring training since, I don't know, forever, since I was a kid. And the Yankees are in the road graze. They're not batting in the bottom of the inning, and they get walked off. And it's just like, it kind of reminded me of 2020. When the Mets walked off the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, I'm like, this is not supposed to happen. This is not supposed to ever happen. But here we are. 888-808-1019. Shame on you, Major League Baseball. Shame on you for having the A's playing in Sacramento in an actual minor league ballpark. And the Rays Airbnb-ing the spring training ballpark of the Yankees and then costing the Yankees, I don't know. It's just the whole series was whack as hell. Devin Williams, I'm not quitting on him. I'm not demoting him. But it's not good enough, bro. They've put you in so many soft landing spots. Here you go, man, 4-run lead. And you find a way to screw it up. And you obviously had some help. But, like, if this guy's supposed to be swing and miss with an airbender pitch and all this other stuff, and he returns back to the spot that they made him shave, and I had bad vibes. I was literally drafting a, like, Yankees win, tell everyone tweet, and I started to erase it because I'm like, wait, we can't act like now Devin Williams is in a flow and a rhythm and going to just, nope, some soft contact, some borderline strikes and balls, and that's, again, going to the umpire crew, it's just, they're whack. I need that automatic balls and strike system, ASAP, ABS ASAP. And for the Mets, for Met fans, and I know Met fans don't want to talk to me, and I love that for me. And I know Mets fans have painted me out to be the number one Met hater and Met troll and all that, and that's great. It literally warms my heart. Young Keith is like, yes. Like, I grew up to be somebody that Met fans don't like. Like, how did I pull that off? But, you know, what I try to, you know, relay on the radio is, like, online and on air are two different things. Online if no Mets fans want me to be objective, if no fans want my analysis on the Mets, no fan, I can't even tweet about the Mets without someone being like, yo, mind your business. Yo, rent free. Yo, you're coping. I'm like, oh, I'm a New York City talk show host. I'm literally on The Fan. This is my fourth year. Like, I've had to watch the Mets and talk about the Mets, and I'm really impressed. And I don't care that, you know, I don't care if you want to hear from me or not, or whether you think this is like, I'm really impressed with the Mets. I don't know what the hell goes on in that pitching lab, but look at Tylor McGill. Look at all these guys coming out of the pitching lab. I was reading a stat as I was putting together show notes, and if you don't follow OptiStats on Twitter, you should. They'll give you some stuff like this. The Mets are the first team in the modern era since 1901 to have their starting pitchers allow fewer than 15 runs, 13 runs allowed, and no homers in their first 11 home games of a season. Now, like, I'm a New Yorker. I've been here for about a decade. I've told you that I've been to Dodger Stadium more than I've been to Citi Field because I'm a Yankee fan. And, like, every time I drive to Queens, I'm in traffic regretting it. Every time I've taken a train to Queens, I'm on the train regretting it because I'm coming from Jersey. But I have seen Citi Field, like, just the difference from last year to this year. You know, Gary Cohen is on the call talking about this is rock bottom. It's an empty ballpark, bad weather. The Mets are losing. They're getting embarrassed. The difference a year makes. When you make a run to the NLCS and your fans start to think and dream about a World Series, better yet, a Subway Series, and you come up just short, but the team that beat you goes on to win it, you start to get this fan base that is believing. What's the moniker of the Mets? You got to believe. And as Steve Cohen goes out and signs a $765 million player and does other things like Clay Holmes or, you know, just other little additions decide, you know, whatever. David Stearns deserves a ton of credit. Steve Cohen deserves a ton of credit. I know this is year like 4 or 5 of Steve Cohen and year 2 of David Stearns, but immediately you're seeing success. The end of the LOL Mets. The place is packed. And they're responding to positive energy, standing ovations, to the place looking like it looked in the postseason. They are giving you reason to go to the ballpark, right? Because I've made fun of the gimmicks, the 5-borough race, the dance crew, certain giveaways and food items and every gimmick under the sun to sell tickets. And when I had that take that, you know, went semi-viral, people were just like, this guy's a Mets hater. No, what I was leaning on is that the Yankees, they don't have to, I mean, they will have bobbleheads and Jazz Chisholm jerseys and, oh, yeah, I'll see you at hockey jersey night. But, like, the Yankees are going to sell tickets and draw because they're the Yankees. The brand is already built. The Mets brand had to rebrand and be reestablished, and it really didn't take that long. When you have good players, when you have a good manager, Carlos Mendoza deserves credit as well. When you have guys like Jeremy Hefner, when you have guys leading the team like Francisco Lindor, and then other role players coming along, whether it's a Jesse Winker. Don't forget about Pete Alonso, who's been huge this year, which I was in on Pete Alonso having a huge year because he got to do it last year and failed. And once they paid Pete, now paid Pete, he's been money. So I can take off my Yankee hater hat, and it's really not. I don't hate the Mets. My drop that Paulie made, I don't hate the Mets. These are my Mets. I've never followed and watched and kept up with a Mets team over these last 4 seasons than any 4 seasons in my life. I've watched more Mets games in the last 4 years than I did from birth to now. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I've watched this. I've seen how they've gotten here. And you'd be a hater to not respect it. Of course I respect it. I'm a baseball fan. You know, I think they'd be a bigger story if they weren't the Mets. No shade. You understand what I'm saying, though. Like, they're one of the better teams in baseball to start this early season, and they did get to the NLCS, and they did have a historic run to the National League Championship Series last year, and, like, don't look now. They're better. Their bullpen is better. Their starting rotation is better. Oh, and also don't look now. Help is on the way. Francisco Alvarez, Jeff McNeil, Dednil Nunez, like, you know, they're going to add at the deadline, too. So for the Met fan, celebrate, hold your head high. Not too high, though, because I, like, you know, you can't point out the attendance and then look at the Yankee fan. Because the Yankee Stadium attendance is like, yeah, obviously the capacity is higher, but like the Yankees are pulling in.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What the Mets are pulling in, right? I think Tommy put out what the Mets attendance was on Saturday. It's 80 degrees. And it was like, you know, the Mets are Big Brother. And that's another thing, too. I'm so done with the Big Brother back and forth. Wasn't it fun, Yankee fans, to make fun of Juan Soto for a week? Now he's broken out of it. Like, the baseball gods gave us that, right? Could you imagine if it was the other way around? The Mets are winning and Juan Soto was having walk-off homers like Lindor and, you know, lead-off homers like Lindor had today. And no, Juan Soto is out of it, though. Juan Soto is going to be Juan Soto. And I just, you know, I don't mind it. I don't. This town is big enough for the both of us. It is better for business. I remember reading the article on air about how the New York economy, they're expecting $990 million to hit during this baseball season between the attraction that Citi Field and Yankee Stadium is going to be for the whole world. People from across the world coming here to watch the Mets play whoever and the Yankees to play whoever. And I cannot wait until we get to May 16th, 17th, and 18th in the Bronx. And if the Mets sweep the Yankees, so be it. If the Yankees sweep the Mets, so be it. It doesn't matter. It is good for business. It's good for WFAN. It's good for the economy. It's good for us as fans. The football teams are trash. And now we'll go back to the phones and talk about the basketball team, who, not for nothing, lost, but like they didn't lose a series. And most people expect even if they do survive this series, they'll lose the next series. But let's stay where we are here. They head to Detroit. The series is even, 1-1. They didn't have it in this game. They didn't have it at the end like they had in the first game. But they got to figure it out fast. Mark is in Sleepy Hollow on the fan. Go for it, Mark.
All right. Hey, how you doing? So, on the note of what you were talking about before, I think Tom Thibodeau is a great coach, but he needs to start trusting more people. He has a tendency of just playing the same seven guys. And I think he has guys on the bench who are chomping at the bit who want to play. And if he's that good of a coach, they should know the system and know what they're doing and give guys like Cat and Brunson, who have been taking too many minutes, a little bit more time.
Yeah, I would expect to see some different guys. I would expect to see some different looks.
And we have yet to beat the Celtics or Cleveland. So, like, it's time to try something new. We need to put different guys on the floor. We need to have Brunson be fresher at the end of the game, Cat be fresher at the end of the game. And you know what? Cat is not Patrick Ewing. He's never going to be Patrick Ewing. So we don't have that guy who's just going to dominate down inside. But we need people who are fresh and ready to go and know what they're doing and putting all their power into what they're doing at that moment. That way that when Brunson's on the court at the end of the game, he's not struggling with his sprained ankle and Cat's not tired. And these guys can finish the game while the other guys pick up the slack in the middle of the game.
Thanks for the call, Mark. I think you will see that it's a 7-game series. Don't show your hand in the first two games. The way that the first game played out with campaign, great. But I already knew they weren't going to try and go back to the well. Now, what other tricks does Tibbs have up his sleeve? He's definitely a better coach than J.B. Bickerstaff. But there are other things that you can't coach and you can't control. So we shall see. I wouldn't quit on him yet. As I'm looking at it, like I said, the Knicks have to go get that first game in Detroit to send a message. Because it's tougher to get up for a 1 o'clock start. You know what I'm saying? So like you're in Michigan for all these days and nights. And like that's the getaway day on Sunday. You get up in the morning, you know, 7, 8 in the morning. By the time you get there, like, I don't know. I just think, like the battery is really going to be in their back in the city. These guys are going to have to stay in that hotel. And even the hotel is not safe. Historically, we know how it goes with fire alarms. We know how, hell, the Yankees were just out there. Cody Bellinger ate some bad wings. Do not, they got to send a memo to the Knicks. Do not order room service. Even if they are in a different hotel. Bobby's in Belmore on the fan next. What's up, Bobby?
Four quick things, Keith. How you doing? Good evening. Number one, Tibbs is not BSing about the foul calls. The more aggressive team, as everybody knows, gets the foul calls. You out rebound, you out, the more aggressive team gets them. Number two, if you don't win game three, you're in a lot of trouble for two reasons. Number one, you're going to have to win game four, and or you're going to have to win game seven, because I don't think the Knicks are going to beat them three in a row. They're down 2-1. So those are going to be two pressure games, and with Towns potty in the corner, instead of getting only six, they talk about, you know, he hasn't scored, but he only got six rebounds. That's a joke. Okay, DiVincenzo got five rebounds and played like an animal. From I see Randall aggressive. Number three, speaking of disappearing, I don't understand why Payne wasn't in there. He played 4 minutes. I don't need to take any shots. But at least start in the fourth quarter. And like the big, you know, if he gets hot, great. You leave. If he's not, you sit him down. I don't understand why he wasn't in there. And, you know,
why he wasn't in the fourth tonight?
Right.
Why because Mikal Bridges was having a better game. And like I said, they weren't going back to the well thinking that Lightning could strike twice.
Well, maybe they should have because Bridges went 0-for-4. Now, at least Bridges shot the ball. And like Towns, who was afraid to shoot the ball, didn't rebound. I mean, he disappeared in some of those Minnesota games against Dallas last year. So I'm not surprised. And people were worried about this. And why? I don't understand. Why is he hiding? He should be down low. If you're not going to shoot, at least try to get rebounds. And, you know, you got killed on the boards. I mean, by 14. So, I mean, and I want to hear, you know, they're going to keep getting the calls, Detroit, because they're the more aggressive team, especially when you're going out back to Detroit. Those fans, they better win their game, like you said, to get 1 o'clock stuck on Sunday. But they have to face a game four, must game, or and it's going to go to 7 minimum because they're not going 3-1. And they go home, even if it's in the Garden, there would be so much pressure. You trust Towns and you trust Bridges in a game 7. You know, I just think it's they got to win game three. And you know, in order to do that, they better be more aggressive because his defense has been bad the whole year. And that three on by Schroeder just was a symbol of what was been going on. How can you let him alone?
They've done it all year. And, I mean, the Pistons didn't shoot great from three, but...
Well, they're the worst defensive three-point shooting team in the league, or one of the worst, the Knicks, and it bit them in the head, bit them in the, you know what, today. So, you know, it's going to continue to do it. Detroit likes shooting the threes, and you think Tibbs, you know, is going to complain about the referees now. Wait till they get back to Detroit. They're going to get, you know, those fans are going to be going nuts over there, and, yeah. You know, I think they're going to have to.
Let's see what happens, Bobby. Thanks for the call. Like, you know, they heard Tibbs and what he had to say. And like, sometimes it can go in your favor. Sometimes it can work against you. 888-808-1019. Trying to go back to that. He said, I really don't give a crap how they call the game as long as it's consistent. Right? Because he felt like Cunningham was getting the calls that Brunson wasn't. So when you put that out there, sometimes you send a message where they heed that message and, okay, they'll be looking for stuff. Sometimes they'll hear that and be like, that's not on us. We call them what we see. And when you get into Detroit, into their building, they're, you know, they're going to have maybe a little bit of the upper hand, but like game three is it. I think if you lose game three, like it became a series last night with the loss in the Garden. You lose game three, the series tilts in favor of Detroit because they could come back to the Garden potentially up 3-1. And I've been saying Knicks in six. For it to be Knicks in six, the Knicks got to take, they got to split here. They got to take that third game. I don't know if they're taking that Sunday game. And then maybe they win in the Garden and they go back to Detroit and end it there and you don't need seven. But where does that come from? Call me up and tell me what has to change. Obviously, if you go back to the first game, you need guys to score over 20 points like OG, like Kat. And you also need guys to rebound and come up with timely steals. You got to turn the ball over from these guys. You got to take the ball from them. Whether it's taking it out of the air or taking it out of their hands. Jalen in Brooklyn on the fan next. Go for it, Jalen.
Yeah, what's up, Keith?
What's up?
Hey, Keith?
Yeah.
So do you think they should put in P.J. Tucker just to rough up Isaiah Stewart if he gets a little aggressive?
I think it's just a look. You know, I think you show it to him early in the game. You try to send a message, set a tone, even with Precious Achiuwa. You know, even getting ready for this series, we heard that... Ariel Huck-Porty was back, and I didn't think he was going to be back for the rest of the year, but, like, you know, trying to come back, he was questionable. Maybe you got to throw in a couple of those guys just to mix it up, just to talk trash, just to kind of, you know, bump a guy, shoulder a guy, foul a guy to be like, yo, right, we're not about to let y'all have your way.
That's what DiVincenzo was here for, and you just saw the fight he had like 2 weeks ago.
And how funny is it that that fight broke out between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Detroit Pistons?
I know.
And it was DiVincenzo right in the middle of it.
Yep. And so also, I want to see Campaign, even though you know he had early foul trouble today, but I want to see him in there more just for the energy, and especially in MSG. I don't know about in Detroit, but in MSG, he brings a lot of energy. We saw last year in the Sixers series also, he brought tons of energy. So I just want to see him on there. He makes faces. He hypes up the crowd. It's just good for
everything. Yeah, he's like that too. Like, I don't think Mikal Bridges is like that. Campaign is like that. They both played on that Suns team that went to the finals.
Keith, I've watched, besides for Friday night since I'm an Orthodox Jew, but I watched every single Knicks game for the past 3 years. Mikal Bridges is one of the most up and down players I've seen on the Knicks.
Yeah, I didn't feel it tonight. I'm sitting in here and I'm like, I literally am asking, why is he shooting? Why is he shooting? Because he's Mikal Bridges, Iron Man. You know, they traded five picks for me, but I'm like, you're not like that, bro. Pass the ball. Like, even if you have an open look, I think everybody rather go down with Brunson missing the shot or Karl-Anthony Towns missing the shot than you missing the shot. And he knew that. That's why he was sitting there on the bench chewing his mouthpiece like, damn.
Who would you rather take that shot, him or Josh Hart?
I mean, Mikal Bridges is a better shooter, but Josh Hart, I've seen him hit those shots in the playoffs.
Exactly. Mikal
Bridges had a change of form going into this
game.
See, he's thinking too much.
I don't know. I think everyone has to settle down a little bit. Just chill. It's one game. This is how the playoffs are. It's aggressive. I agree with Tom Soto. I think Josh Hart should have gone up there, or next game if you have the same thing. Even if you win, just go up there after post game and just blow your mouth off.
Thanks for the call, Jalen. I don't know what blow your mouth off means. Did you catch that, Fleeks? I don't know. It's like go up there and blow your mouth off. I don't know. Kids say the darndest things. Kids these days. I'm trying to keep up with the slang and the lingo, but I ain't heard of that one. Blow your mouth off. Kanye West probably thinking about blowing his mouth off. 888-808-1019. Charles is in Allenhurst, New Jersey. Charles, you got it.
Yo, what up, man? Listen, man, this Knicks team, I'm disappointed in the loss tonight. I just got to say one thing. You are not the 2024 Mets, bro. You are not going to be coming back, being down in the game until the very end. You're not going to be doing that, dude. And this is a team that is worse than you. You're playing down to the competition. I understand that they're a young team with a lot of motivation. They're hungry. This is a team that hasn't won, as we saw, a playoff game since 2008, whatever it is. But you got to go out there knowing you're the more talented team and taking care of business. I don't want to hear any more of this, Karl-Anthony Towns not shooting a basketball in the final 17 minutes of the game, Mikal Bridges not being able to connect from three-point range, especially when it matters late in the game there. Don't want to hear about it. Because when Karl-Anthony Towns, he doesn't provide anything on defense. When he's not shooting the basketball, what does he bring to the game? He brings nothing. He's a statue out there.
In that first game, bro, he was able to rebound and get steals that came up huge. They can't be the make-it-happen Mets. They're not the make-it-happen Knicks as far as coming from behind like they did in that first game. They need to get a lead. They need to establish some kind of dominance. We haven't seen
100%.
That yet.
100%, and they're way too talented to sit here and be playing, basically seesaw with this Pistons team all the way until the third quarter, where it feels like Saturday night, when the Pistons had a little bit of a lead going into the fourth. You're not going to go on a 21-0 run. That's like scoring. I'll bring another baseball analogy. It's like going, being down, like whatever it is, 4-2 in the eighth and scoring like five,
being,
six
being
runs.
Down
it's not going to happen.
8-4 in the ninth. At George M. Steinbrenner Field, and Devin Williams, the best closer in the game, comes in the game. You're not supposed to win that game.
With Devin Williams taking them out, you never know what that guy these days. But yeah, man. But yeah, they got to get out to lead early, and they got to get off to a hot start, because they're not going to be able to keep coming back, especially with You know the environment's going to be electric up there in Detroit.
Of course. Thanks for the call, Charles. And that leads me into what I'm thinking about now. You know, I'm not a Knicks fan, but I have been to the Garden a bunch of times. And I've been to playoff games. And, you know, as you hear dun, 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 the accordion playing, and, you know, whether it's Biggie or whether it was, like, hip-hop music that plays and, like, the vibes in there, the go, New York, go, New York, go. It is an environment that I think these guys lean into and play into, good and bad. I think the special air that they pump in there, it fills these guys' heads up. Where, you know, they're thinking they're going to come back. They think that they can make the plays. They think that they're the better team. Well, the Pistons think that they're the better team. And now, after they took one in the Garden, they feel like they have the advantage going back to their place for the next two. So maybe the Knicks need to feel that. Maybe they need to feel a young team with a fan base that is starving for this. And they go to a city like Detroit, and people are heckling them. And there's less Knicks fans and celebrities, every actor and rapper and former player all around the baseline, all around, you know, the bench area. Like, maybe they need to go to Detroit where it's grittier. Maybe they need to go to Detroit away from Madison Square Garden and the watch parties outside and the whole city behind them. And maybe they need to feel like, you know, desperate. Maybe they need to feel like, okay, they're going to call for our coach's head if we don't win. Turn it on. Fight. Because I didn't see them turn on the fight that they were supposed to turn on in that game. Even in the fourth quarter where they were able to tie it up. They didn't fight to finish it. Wasn't good enough for me. I'm sitting in here and I'm like, well, that just changed the whole show. Because if you go up 2-0, I thought they were about to steal another one in the fourth quarter and go up 2-0 where I'm like, oh, book it. It's done. It's wraps. They can go back to Cleveland and lose two. Or Cleveland. Go back to Detroit and lose the next two and still, you know, have an advantage here. So, I don't know, man. Let's take a break here. I do want to talk baseball. I do want to talk Yankees. If you want to talk about Clark Schmidt, if you want to talk about Jason Dominguez, Embrace the Martian, Jazz Chisholm, you know, he's got 7 homers. He's tied with Judge, even though he's striking out a ton. You know, we can talk about the Yankees pitching. We'll talk about the Yankees lineup. Some guys struggling in the Yankees lineup. Some guys like Paul Goldschmidt, great. Trent Grisham, love to have him. And then for the Mets, too, and the Met fan, like, everything is just turning up roses for the Mets. Everything is great for the Mets right now. 5-game win streak. The Philadelphia Phillies, they battled late in the 9th inning. We can talk about Edwin Diaz if you guys aren't feeling him. But something I'll say before we break here about Edwin Diaz, he's not alone, right? Emmanuel Clase, struggling this year. Devin Williams, struggling this year. Like, some of these top flight closers are not really looking like themselves in the first month of the season here. So don't quit on Edwin Diaz just yet, especially when you have a bullpen full of a bunch of other guys that get it done. They were able to get to Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola's another guy that I don't know what the hell happened to him. He's been getting rocked. He's been giving up hits and runs, and he hasn't found it yet in this early on. And you know, a couple solo shots from Lindor and Winker, and then I knew the Mets weren't going to lose that game. I knew that their bullpen was good enough to hold, and, you know, they tack on some runs. And, yeah, we'll talk more about the Mets and the Yankees if you would indulge me. 888-808-1019. But if you're on the hold to talk, if you're on hold to talk Knicks, I'm going to get to you. The Knicks lose last night. The series is even 1-1. And they go back to Detroit, and they have to take game 3. The way it's looking to me, you got to take that one, because if you go down 3-1 coming back to the Garden, you're fighting for your life, and you've already been fighting for your life in pretty much every quarter of this first 2 games. Keith McPherson on the Fan. Stay with me. I'm rocking till 2 a.m. I'll be right back after this.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, we're back. 888-808-1019. We're going to start talking more baseball. Lindor and the Mets. Tylor and the Mets. Tyrone in the Mets. I don't know who else from the Mets. Max Kranick, Edwin Diaz. How about Reed Garrett? I was listening to the game about, I can't remember the stat. I think happy birthday to Keith Rad. I think it was his birthday on the call with Howie Rose yesterday. But they had a stat about how Reed Garrett has come in, I think almost every time with inherited runners, and he's given up nada. So there's a Reed Garrett stat going on about how this guy has had traffic on the base paths, always gets out of it. Doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying. In Hefner's laboratory. I want to know what's going on. I need Matt Blake to get some of that info for the Yankees, you know? I need some help, man. I need Devin Williams to go to Jeremy Hefner's laboratory just for a day or two and come back, right? These guys are having, like, Tyler McGill had his career high, 10 strikeouts. Clay Holmes had that, like, last week. These guys coming out of the bullpen are lights out. Edwin Diaz, not for nothing, yo. Edwin Diaz has always kind of been like, he had 1 year where he was unhittable, where he was lights out, where Buck Showalter could use him in the eighth inning, whatever. But he's always been a little bit of an adventure. I don't think you could trust him. But what I said before was, hey, he's not alone. Emmanuel Clase does not look the same. As much as people want to say that Pete Alonso broke Devin Williams, then the Yankees broke Emmanuel Clase. And Judge and Stanton, and I don't think Juan Soto got anything off him, but Judge and Stanton did. So, yeah, the Yankees broke Emmanuel Clase. 888-808-1019. The Knicks aren't broken. I know you guys want to throw them away. And it's tough because, like, you don't see a way for them to rock with the Celtics. You don't see a way for them to overcome the second-round opponent that they are going to face. And so, sometimes it's like, what's the use? Damned if you do, damned if you don't. The ultimate end is going to end at the hands of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Kristaps Porzingis. But I look at this series as like, this is a can't-lose series for the Knicks. The Pistons can lose it. The Pistons can win this one game in the series, and their fans are going to be like, yep, good enough. It's been years. Knicks can't lose it because there's a good chance that, like, again, as I've been saying, every year you tweak this team. Every year we see a different machination of the Knicks. Okay, there will become a time where they start to deteriorate and take a step back. And if they lose with this machination, I don't know exactly what that definition of that word is. If, this iteration, this version of the Knicks, after going to the second round, you lose to the Hawks, skip a year, you lose to the Heat, you lose to the Pacers in the second round. If this year they get bounced in the first round, then that will be enough for talking heads, radio hosts, analysts, fans, podcasters to all scream, hey, the head coach has got to go. And these guys, they don't want to see that. Your captain is a Tibbs guy. Josh Hart, even though they've had some back and forths, he's definitely a Tibbs guy. He's played his, he's played his best basketball, his most minutes under Tibbs. Karl Anthony Towns, probably a Tibbs guy as well. I don't know about Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges probably checked him on the minutes thing and checked him on his own minutes. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Avery out in St. Louis on The Fan in New York.
Hey, Keith, how are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing out there?
I'm all right. Wrapping up. As everybody's saying so accurately, absolutely, if you lose game three, the hole that they're going to find themselves in and the confidence difference that's going to be present between the two teams is going to make it so difficult, I dare say impossible, for the Knicks to come back and win this series. So game three is as much of a must-win game as there is. And the biggest one of the biggest talking points coming into the series was the idea of mental toughness. And mental toughness can have many definitions. It's one of those things, right? It's one of those terms that have so many definitions. In this case, I don't believe that the Knicks are being, or that anything that Detroit can say can faze the Knicks. I just don't believe that. But I do know that this team does not have the same identity as last year's team. I'm not throwing them away. It's just something that we know we just know that's the situation. That's been the situation all year long. That's been the talking point about this.
You're going to long for that team. And I kind of hate that they did this, but they had to do it because Mitch was hurt and Jericho Sims was not it. And they needed a big, and supposedly they were looking at a Carl Anthony Towns trade for a minute. But you are going to long for that team that we saw in January of 2024. That team that we saw when they added OG Anunoby and Randall was still healthy and Dante was playing, like, iHeart was there. You're going to long for that team because you'll never know what they could have been. You never got to see them. Like, they made that trade, and you never got to see it materialize with all four of the Villanova guys, Julius Randall, and then iHeart obviously took the most money that he could get. You know, OKC is a great team to join, and because of the apron, you couldn't pay him. But yeah, you'll always think about what could have been, and that sucks.
I'm pretty sure there was a point in the game where Mike Breen said on the MSG call that there was a ball that hit Fat Joe. As soon as Fat Joe's face was on the camera, I knew the game was over.
Oh my God. You're not the only one. I missed that. I think that might have happened while I was driving in, but I saw a bunch of people, because some people know I'm connected to Fat Joe. Some people don't. Some people in my chat were even like, it's the Fat Joe curse. It's Fat Joe. Why is Fat Joe? And I'm like, oh, come on. Like, Fat Joe doesn't deserve all this.
No, but in all seriousness, not related to Fat Joe. The whole question about the whole idea of this Villanova Knicks that could have been team, in my opinion, I don't really understand a part of it. Like, on one hand, yes, I'm making the argument that this team doesn't have the same identity as the one that they had last year. But I don't feel like Dante DiVincenzo and Julius Randle leaving are the reason that this team's not as mentally tough. I just think that they hold themselves to a different standard this year, so they don't have to be as scrappy, whereas the Pistons are kind of like the Knicks of a few years ago that had to be scrappy to win. It's just like, I feel like they're looking at a older version, or they are looking at themselves as what they used to have to be, and they don't know how to contend with it, because it's a tough thing to deal with when a team is pesky and a team is desperate.
Man, the identity of that team last year was like a group of guys that nobody wanted at first. They were all like underdogs. They were all guys that were skipped over. They weren't lottery picks. They were, these guys were not drafted by the Knicks, but like together, they built a scrappy team that, like, you didn't want to be on the floor with. They were going to out-hustle you for a loose ball. They were going to out-rebound you. They were going to make the extra pass and find the open guy.
And my point is, that's what this group of Pistons is. They're the Knicks that once were.
Yeah, but I don't know about that. I give them credit for the collection of guys that they put together in this motley crew, because they do have guys like Dennis Schroeder. Nobody wanted him. Tobias Harris, they couldn't wait to get him up out of Philly. Tim Hardaway Jr., I forgot, was even on their team at some point this season. Malik Beasley signed a one-year deal with them. They have those guys, but, like, I mean, they don't even have Jaden Ivey, who they drafted. They drafted Stewart. They drafted Asor Thompson. Those guys are their young guys, even Holland and Jalen Duren. So they have a good mixture of veteran journeymen and homegrown drafted players that are coming together, and they're forming their identity. I guess they are gritty and they are tough, but they're just not, in my opinion, they're not better than the Knicks. They're not. They don't have the talent and experience on the floor and the coach. So if the Knicks lose this series to them, that's going to be a massive shock and disappointment.
No, absolutely. I, that's what I'm saying, though. I'm not saying they're better than the Knicks. I'm saying the Knicks are better than they are. But it's that mindset that can overtake you. And look what it's doing for them. They're getting all the calls. I mean, there's just so many elements.
And that's why
the Knicks have to prove me. The Knicks have to prove us wrong. They have to go out there and win.
Exactly. That's why they need. I think they need to feel what it feels to get away from home, because Madison Square Garden will inflate your ego sometimes to your own detriment, because you're thinking,
there it is.
Don't worry about it. We got it. Don't worry about it. Like Carl Anthony Towns says, like, they're just going out there thinking that the ball is just going to bounce their way and that they're going to hit all the shots and that they can come back. Nah, those guys are out there scratching and clawing for everything, willing to bite a kneecap off. You got to match their intensity. You got to be as hungry as they are. And I think going on the road, dealing with those fans, I think that'll turn it up to a different level for them. Hopefully they get the calls, but they absolutely cannot lose game three. Avery, thanks for the call, man. 888-808-1019. As we start to mix some baseball into the conversation, the Mets are hungry. The Mets are winning. The Mets are out to finish the story from last year. And I know it's early, and I know people will poke holes, and I'm not like this, right? This is how you know I'm not that much of a hater. Again, I don't hate the Mets. These are my Mets. I follow them closely. I have to. I hate some of the goofy-ass, corny Mets fans that I interact with online, but I don't know any of y'all. I never see y'all. You have a Pete Alonso avatar, or you know what I'm saying? Like you're hiding behind Mr. Met as your profile picture. Some of them I got issue with, but that's like 5% of the fan base. There's so much of the fan base that I'm seeing when I'm watching this game, jumping up and down, standing up at the game, watching the Mets happy out there at Citi Field. It's packed. It's full. You're enjoying a good team. You're enjoying having a good team now, consistently now, right? Even if we go back to 2022 and we talk about different machinations and versions of the Knicks, this is a different version of the Make It Happen Mets from 2022. And the OMG Mets from 2024. You don't have all of the guys, but you have enough of those guys. There's been talk, you know, asking David Stearns about the chemistry of these guys, about the culture in the clubhouse. The leader of the team talks a lot about that culture. And he talks about the culture of the Mets, the standard of the Mets. I love how accountable Lindor has been when he has been at fault, making the errors. And then I also love, as a captain type of player, the shortstop, the leadoff hitter, how he sets the tone, how he takes matters into his own hands. A 4 RBI night tonight. Stay tuned for the big shot of the night. Zach is in Wanacue on the Fan in New York. Go for it, Zach.
Keith, what's up, man? First, I want to say, not a Mets hater. I know you're a Yankees guy, but you're the only one I can tolerate online. You're the best host. Other than that, I tweeted at you and said Lindor was the best shortstop in New York baseball history. You told me to call in, so here I am.
Oh, no. Nah. He said it on air. Go on. Tell us why.
All right. So through 11 seasons, through their age this year, Lindor, more war, more home runs, more RBIs, same gold gloves, 4-0 silver sluggers to Lindor. So he's better at the plate. They're equal in terms of awards in the field. Lindor is going to catch him in terms of, like, appearances, everything, all that. You know what? The averages will probably be better for Jeter. But in terms of everything else with the World Series, the All-Stars, all that, you got to look at the teams Jeter had. I mean, just individually, Lindor is he's a stud. No other better way to put it. He is the guy.
I'm not going to hate on Lindor. But I got to
take Jeets. You don't hate ever, so... I know you're going to take Jeter.
I'll never hate on Lindor, honestly. I think I had to take a while ago about his contract and how I felt like that was Steve Cohen going out there to make the big splash with his contract. But he's worth every penny of that contract.
Yeah. If Steve didn't do what he did following that up, that would have been a fair take. And I would have agreed with you. But we've done some other stuff then. I just feel like Jeter made some incredible plays and incredible moments. Like,
and he had incredible talent around him.
Yeah, but I just think individually it's at least an argument, and I'm just so happy to have Lindor. I can't wait for him to be my captain.
How old are you, Zach? Are you not a Jose Reyes guy? Because I got some homies that used to swear by Jose Reyes.
I'm 33, but I'm a little bit newer to being a Mets guy. I'm like 8 years
okay,
in.
Okay, so you weren't really watching Jose Reyes back then.
Yeah.
He's not better than Lindor anyway.
Chase Utley is not my guy. I hate that guy, but...
Maybe a Ray Ordonez guy? No?
No. I mean, I'm really just the current Mets
team. Early.
Yeah. But, I really think that Lindor is the best shortstop that I've seen play in New York individually. I mean, like I said, Jeter made the big plays on the big teams in the big moments, and I'm not going to take that away from him. But
he's a close second to Didi Gregorius. I'll give him a close second to Thanks for the call, Zach. You bring up a good point. I remember a point in time where, folks were asking who's the better shortstop in New York, Gleyber Torres or Francisco Lindor. I didn't partake in that one. I wasn't even on the Fan yet, but I'm just like, that's stupid. Don't say that. Not for nothing. Gleyber can't even field the position. And once he can't field the position, that's going to bleed over into his at-bats not being good. I mean, there were actually some people talking about Volpe versus Lindor. Let's not do that either. Let's not do that. Please. Lindor is like that, bro. I was at the game when he hit those three homers And I talk about that Subway Series being the best Subway Series, and now this year we're getting it back to a two-weekend series, you know, in mid-May. And I mean, that 4th of July, the series that's on July 4th, 5th, 6th, that's insane. I don't know if I'm going to make it to that one. I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to drive all the way out to Queens, and I'll probably have some family stuff to do. I'll see you in the Bronx, though. But anyway, back to Lindor being, you know, and the whole point of Zach's call. I told him to dial 888-1019 and repeat this, and he said he was on his way home. He was on the 7 line, but he said Francisco Lindor is the best shortstop in New York baseball history. Now, he just told you, you know, he wasn't watching Ray Ordonez, and he wasn't watching Jose Reyes, but obviously it's a shot at Derek Jeter. Obviously it's a shot at the captain, who has 5 rings and World Series MVP and All-Star Game MVP. And I mean, Jeter is so decorated. Lindor would, I don't know, Lindor as far as a player, switch hitter, his glove, his bat, I mean, even the milestone that he just hit, 250 home runs, like, in another 10 years, I don't know what we could be talking about with Lindor, but I'll say Jeter, you know, Jeter gets the short end of the stick by this younger generation because they don't understand how clutch he was. If there was a Derek Jeter with these Yankees, as far as being as clutch as he was at the plate and leading by example in the field and being that standard for everybody else to follow, like if Judge had Jeter's clutch gene, forget about it. 888-808-1019, you know, Jeter for me, like, I started watching baseball when Jeter came up, and he's untouchable to me. He's just untouchable to me, the captain. There's just so many things that he did. Let's see. 5 World Series championships, 7 American League pennants, 14 All-Star selections. I was at his last All-Star game. 5 Gold Glove Awards, 3,465 regular season hits. And it's just about the moxie. It's about the swag, the aura, the way that he carried himself before there was social media, you know. He wasn't no family man back then. He was pulling the baddest. Like, I just think Derek Jeter in New York, the level that he did it, and even how he did it, just, I don't know, it's tough for anybody to come close to. But if you're talking about Lindor, there's metrics and stuff that you could say, like, yeah, Lindor is a freak. Lindor, and he's not done. I got a ton of respect for the player that he is and how much he matured in New York. Right? Can I add that? Like, it's one thing to have the contract, and, you know, we talk about him doing the thumbs down and him having slow starts. Like, last year was him really maturing in New York. This is my team, playing through a back injury, putting the team on his back, coming up with clutch hits. You want to talk about, like, breaking up a no-hitter, you know, in their final outs coming through. Lindor became that guy, and he's carried it over to this year and this season. It's been amazing to watch him set the tone consistently, him be accountable consistently. Like, he is the model. He's the Mets captain. He just doesn't have the title yet. In Massapequa, Matt, you got it. You're in there before we go to break.
Keith, what's going on, bro? That guy that's even comparing Francisco Lindor to Derek Jeter is a clown. I mean, Francisco Lindor is an unbelievable athlete. He probably has the edge on athleticism. But, like, and I'm not a stats guy, but you go into the stats. Derek Jeter's career batting average is .310. You know, Lindor's is .275 around, whatever. But 14 All-Star appearances. And I get it, you know, Lindor had his nice MVP year last year. He had a great year. But come on, bro. Like,
no, it's not a thing yet. I think it's so premature because you have to win. This is New York. All we talk about is championships and winning. He got to the NLCS. They lost. He didn't even win the pennant. So, like, win the pennant first. Get to the World Series. I mean, he's played in a World Series with the Cleveland Indians. He was part of that 22-win Indians group.
Yeah, against they lost the Cubs.
Yeah, they lost in the World Series as well.
Yep, yep. And no, Derek Jeter. Listen, man, he was the face of consistency. I mean, Lindor was good last year, but the year before that, the thumbs down, and
yeah,
you know,
still,
the jury's
still
out.
He's got a long way to go consistently to prove it, and I think he will. But like, we can't just say because he walked it off Friday night and then he started the game with a homer, like, he's the best shortstop in New York history. Like, we can't jump to that that quickly.
Nah.
But whatever, I let him get it off. He took it from Twitter to the radio.
Yeah, good for him. You know, he's been watching baseball for 8 years. You know,
he said he didn't even go back to Jose Reyes. Thanks for the call, Matt. I guess we'll go, you know, Derek Jeter, Phil Rizzuto, Francisco Lindor, Didi Gregorius, and then, you know, right behind Didi Gregorius. Francisco Lindor, 888-808-1009. Nah, Lindor is definitely better than Didi. But, man, I was there when Didi hit that grand slam against the Twins in the DS. Rock the place, boy. I was like, what? I was in the section that he hit the ball to. I was like, good night. Turn it up in here. They're not beating us. And that's still my favorite day and night at Yankee Stadium. Because we got there early, and we were in the Bronx from... I saw Mike Ford walking in, so I had to have been up there in the Bronx at like 9, 10 in the morning, just because sometimes, like especially coming from Jersey, I don't want to deal with the traffic. And this is before my son was born and before I was married, so like I could just wake up, tell my girl at the time, like, I'm out, playoffs, postseason, you know where to find me. Those were the days. You just be like, I'm going to Yankee Stadium right now, where, you know, at the time I think I was living in West New York. And going up, you know, through Edgewater to Yankee Stadium, going over the George Washington, I remember one night I made it back in 17 minutes with no traffic. I used to be able to dip from there to Yankee Stadium in the morning, 25 minutes. That's a dream, to live in Jersey and be able to get to Yankee Stadium, no traffic, 25 minutes. But if you wait, that doubles, triples. So, yeah, postseason, I was like, I'm not playing those games. Shout out to my guy, Adoni Batista, because I think Adoni, he lived in the complex like maybe a mile south of me, less. And he's like, I'll pick you up. What time you want to go? And he's triple OG as far as like season tickets and seeing the Yankees. I told him, like, yo, we should be up there by 10. He's like, all right, bet, I'll pick you up 9:30. All right, we out. Can't wait for it. 888-808-1019. Stay tuned for the big shot of the night as we get into this last hour that I have tonight on The Fan. We're talking baseball now. If you want to weigh in on the Mets and Francisco Lindor or Aaron Judge and the Yankees, or, I don't know, Lindor versus Jeter for the best shortstop in New York baseball all time. Keith McPherson on The Fan. Let's take this break and we'll be right back.